Hi, everybody. My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here this morning. I'm glad to be sober. I'm glad to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to thank the committee for extending the privilege of me participating in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. It's my opinion, and I hope it always remains such, that it's some type of a privilege to be allowed to come and sit in these rooms. I have never been able to get it through my sick head that I have a right to everything that goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous just because I was lucky enough to stumble into a room, get sober, and stay that way. Everything that's good and decent in my life is some type of an unearned gift that I received from the God I discovered sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, if I live till the 4th of next month, sometime before that date, I haven't had a drink of alcohol, a mood-altering or a tranquilizing drug in my system. That's when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And during all that period of time, I've been an active participating member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've had the opportunity from time to time to go back and look over my life. And one thing I always look for when I go back there, I always try to find out whatever it was I did way back there that was good enough to allow me to live the life I live today. And to help me can't find it. I look. Believe me, I look. Because if I could find it, I'd do it again. So I've come to the conclusion that my sobriety and my way of life is a gift from God. I've just come to that conclusion. I mean, nobody had to read a book to me or give me a tape. I just come to that conclusion. I was told by the old man who was the only father I've ever known, Alcoholics Anonymous, that I get sober by the grace of God. I believe that. I believe we all get sober by the grace of God. But I've had to stay sober by the application of these principles in my life one day at a time. Now, my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous very nearly became my last meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I sat in that meeting that day, and the people, very much like they've done already today, if they'd have went through a rigmarole like we've been through this morning, I'd have been gone about 16 seconds into my first meeting. Did we miss anybody in this room? But the people talked to me about being sober. And my reaction to that very simply was this: Alcoholics Anonymous got nothing to offer me. And the reason I thought that is because I was as physically sober when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous as I am right now. As physically sober. But that had always seemed to be my problem. If I could have stayed loaded forever, I'd have never came to Alcoholics Anonymous. But I kept getting interrupted out there on my happy road of destiny by people in little black and white cars. Don't you think it's amazing that the longer Alcoholics Anonymous is in operation, the more successful it becomes? Every once in a while, some genius falls out of the woodwork to try to help us. They come through with breakthroughs in the treatment of alcoholism. I mean, they just have all kinds of stuff. A few years ago, they had what was really a breakthrough, they thought. They call it intervention. Oh, my God. People ran out and become interventionists. I mean, God, they just got... I had to have the heart to write the guy and tell him that the Los Angeles County Sheriffs knew about it in 1940. And if you live the way I live, they'll intervene in your life too. But I don't know. I didn't know anything about sobriety. I thought a state of undrunkenness was sobriety. I thought if you didn't have any alcohol or chemicals in your system, you were in a state of sobriety. That was my goofy thinking. I've come to understand that that's not really true. That's just undrunkenness. That has nothing to do with sobriety. But I don't know what it was. I don't know where alcoholism comes from. I don't know where... I'm extremely pleased to be here this morning, fully clothed and in my right mind. And I only tell you that because a little over 45, 46 years ago, I came to in a cell in solitary confinement of maximum security penitentiary, drifting in and out of total insanity. Now, because of a loving God who has expressed himself through our program called Alcoholics Anonymous, it isn't necessary anymore for me to crawl around on my hands and eat like an animal. And if I don't get nothing else out of the deal, I can live with it all the way home. It makes me feel good. Now, I'd like to be able to stand here and go along with the popular theory. That's where alcohol took me to. That's where I took me to. The only thing that alcohol ever did in my life, it kept me alive long enough to stumble into that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm as sure as I'm standing here, if I hadn't taken a drink of alcohol, I'd have blown my brains out before I was 9 years old. I'm a misfit. I have always been a misfit. I don't understand what's going on in the world. I don't know whether I was born alcoholic or not. I don't know where it comes from. Neither does anybody else. I don't know where you catch it from a toilet seat, from a glass. I don't know where you catch it. But neither does anybody else. Nobody has ever been able to figure out why one out of maybe 10 people who ingest alcohol into the system react to it the way that I do. They've never been able to figure it out. They've spent billions of dollars trying to understand that. Nobody knows. I don't either, so I don't even worry about that. I don't know where it come from. Now, I know a lot about whiskey. I've always known a lot about whiskey. My people drank whiskey. They were Irish. They had no religion to hold their guilt down. They just went crazy. They're just goofy people. I mean, they were bootleggers and whores and farmers. They were crazy folks. They just were. I mean, that Saturday night to their house was jump-off night. I mean, they jumped off on each other. That's where they jumped off. I mean, just somebody was telling a joke about whipping somebody in a bar. Irish people know all about whipping people. They whip on one another. After they run out of other people to whip on, they whip on one another. They drank each other's whiskey and stole each other's women. And whoever survived was the king that week, I guess. I don't know how they worked the deal out. My problem was I understood that. That's my problem. I understood the violence and the whole things that went on with it. You know, what bothered me more than anything else, along about Wednesday, they put their arms around one another and said, "We love one another because we're family." Now, I don't know whether that scarred me or not. It wasn't brought out on the psychiatrist's couch many years later. I only know that I never uttered that word to another human being prior to the coming program of Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time after I was here. It wasn't in my vocabulary. I don't know why that is. I've been looking for a way out of this dilemma as far back as I can ever possibly remember. I've been looking for something. I've known I've needed an answer all my life. Now, I don't know what my problem is, so I don't know how to seek the answer. It's hard to seek the answer to a problem if you don't know what it is. Restless and ill and discontented all my life, angry, hostile, and bitter most of my life. I don't understand then, as I've come to understand today, that those are the symptoms of the most deadly disease that's ever been known to mankind. It's killed more people in the 7,000 years that's been recorded history from it than anything in the world. And even today, it's the number one killer in the world today. It's the number two cause of permanent insanity in the world today, and that's what I got. That's what you say when you say you're an alcoholic. I don't understand that. I'm looking for a way out. I don't know what these people got. I looked up one day and saw my grandmother. My grandmother lived till she was 90 years old. She never took a drink of alcohol or smoked a cigarette in her life. My grandmother probably wouldn't think it's a big deal that I've been sober almost 44 years. Big deal, she'd say. I ain't had a drink for 90. She should have had a couple, Granny, make you feel better from time to time, for Christ's sakes. My grandmother got everything she needed out of where she went. If she'd get up every day of her life, my grandmother did. Sundays, particularly on Sundays, my grandmother got up and stepped over the bodies of all of her kids and her husband. And she went somewhere with the best thing she had on. She came back a couple of years later, a little lighter in her step, a little easier in her being. She danced around them and cleaned them up and cooked for them and sang songs to Jesus. Now, I took a look at that. And not knowing what's wrong with me, not having a clue what's wrong with me, I get an idea in my head. All I'm going to have to do is go where my grandmother goes, do what my grandmother does, I'd be like my grandmother. I'm not like my grandmother. My grandmother's not alcoholic. I didn't know that. So on Sunday morning, I get up, put my hand in my grandmother's hand, and take off with my grandmother and go sit in my grandmother's church with my grandmother and wait for whatever happens to Granny to happen to me. And I don't think it happened. I don't really know whether it did or not. But I know the reason it didn't. It took me a long time to figure this out. There was nothing wrong with my grandmother's church whatsoever. Something wrong with the jackass sitting at it. That's what the problem was. Me. See, what I'm doing in that church is what I do all my life prior to coming here. For a long time after I'm here, I'm even guilty of doing it sometime today. I'm looking for something way out here to make me feel better in here. And that only goes to prove to me that the problem's always been there. What happened to me one day, I sit on the back porch of my grandfather's house with my grandfather. I watching Grandpa drink whiskey out of a fruit jar. He put it down, went somewhere, I picked it up and took a drink of it. That's all I did. I didn't think about it. I didn't say, "Oh, I just can't hardly wait to go crazy." I just took a drink. And what happened to me is what happened to makes me an alcoholic. That's very simple to me. The next couple of minutes of my life is what makes me an alcoholic. That's very simple. It's the reaction I have to alcohol. That stuff, it wasn't bad. If it was bad, do you think I'd ever drink it again? I mean, it's a good thing. Alcohol to an alcoholic is nectar to the gods. That stuff went inside of me and stilled the madness. It took me from the black pit of nothingness and stood me in the gray fringe of the business of living and installed in me some type of arrogance and said, damn you, world of Sauron. I'm not good enough to be around the good people, but I'm too good to be around the bad people. It's okay right here. That's what alcohol did for me. But that's not the thing that drove me into the gates of insanity and death and beyond. What got happened to me is what happens to alcoholics of my type once I put alcohol into my system. See, once I put alcohol into my system, then and only then I drink to overcome a craving that's beyond all human understanding and beyond all human help. I didn't know that. Because I took a drink. And then the drink took a drink. And then the drink took me. Because the story of my life for the next 20 years is what happened to me after my first drink. 3 days later, I was pulled out from underneath a bridge and stood in front of a judge and sent to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, I took a drink of alcohol. They pulled me out of a car in Compton, stood me in front of a judge and sent me to 20 years in the penitentiary. Now, that's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk and went places. I just traveled around out there. I went from reform school to junior penitentiaries to nut houses. Now they call them treatment centers. I'm a little more partial to nut houses, if you want to know the truth. It's a little more macho. But come on, if you're going to be bad for Christ's sake, you ought to be bad. I mean, don't quit drinking because you puke a little. Hang in there. Give it everything you got. Alcoholics Anonymous works a hell of a lot better when you run out of options. I gave it everything I had out there. I threw everything into the battle, lost the battle, didn't know what I was fighting. That's the insanity of alcoholism. I don't know what's kicking my tail. I walked out of institution from the time I was 8 years old till I was 30, as physically sober as I am at this moment, and not one time did I ever say to myself, self, do you realize how long it's been since you've had a series of those electroshock treatments? Why don't you have a drink? Why don't you have a drink of alcohol and go out there and kill your baby brother? Have a drink of alcohol and go out there and tear your mother's heart out one more time. Have a drink of alcohol and put her deeper into that hell you've created for. Go ahead, have a drink of alcohol and go out there and run them streets, be in them gangs, get in them fights, do all that kind of stuff. Destroy people's lives, hurt people. Why don't you have a drink and do that? Nope. I never one time ever took a drink of alcohol to get drunk. Isn't that amazing for an alcoholic to say that? I never took a drink to go out and have a party. I never took a drink of alcohol to get out of it. I took a drink of alcohol for the reason alcoholics of my type take a drink after being sober for a period of time. It's just to go, whew. But you see, that's all it takes. Because then the phenomenon of craving takes over for alcoholics of my type, and I'm powerless not to take the next drink. And I repeated that action over and over and over and over and over again, not one time. When I came to in that cell in solitary confinement in that penitentiary, crawling around on that concrete floor in them old long-handled underwear, barking at the moon, I didn't have a clue if my life had depended on me. So somebody said, you an alcoholic man? I said, no, I'm not. But in that cell, I'm doing the same thing I did at my grandmother's knee. I'm looking for an answer. I'm looking for what it is that's bothering me, this torment that's inside of me, this sickness that I don't understand, this situation that's going on in my life. I don't understand. I just don't understand what's going on. I stood in front of judges, called blood-sucking parasites in society. I was told I was never supposed to be around decent people ever again. I told a woman who was the mother of my oldest daughter, if you care anything about that child, that I'd never be allowed to lay eyes on. It went on and on and on. And all that did, it just make my head explode inside because I'm cold sober when I hear that and I can't stand the truth about me. So I've known the truth about me all my life. I just have never heard anybody else say it. And that's what stumbled into your meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous on the fourth day of November, 1959. I didn't come here to get sober. If I'd have known where I was coming, I wouldn't have come. You'd put a lie detector test tomorrow and say, you alcoholic? I said, no, I'm not alcoholic. Matter of fact, if you'd asked me, that ought to probably hit you anyhow. I don't know what's wrong with me. I've got a lot of labels, a lot of names, a lot of things that I'd been called by the therapists and the psychiatrists and the sociologists and the criminologists and the penologists and the preachers and the teachers. All my life they put labels on me what I am. I don't know what's wrong with me. Not a clue. I know they don't know either. That's the problem. So I don't know what's going on. And I walked into this meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous because the institution I was in that day allowed women to come in there. That's why I came. I mean, I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous almost 44 years ago to smell perfume. And I've been honking and sniffing around ever since. I mean, I got a whiff of old Tina over here. I mean, she's downwind. I mean, just... That may have been the attraction that brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous, but that's not what brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll tell you what brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous. See, my last time out, I killed me, for all intents and purposes. Dead on arrival in the old Los Angeles County Jail. Thrown in a cell. Big joke. If you live long enough, kid, we'll take you to court. I ended up strapped down on the bed in the old Los Angeles County Jail prison ward with a doctor standing over my bed telling me I'm going to die. See, I'd had 2 years doing to me exactly what I wanted to do to me anytime I wanted to do it with enough money to do it with. And that's where I ended up, 128 pounds, a bright yellow, tied down on the bed with a doctor telling me I'm going to die at the ripe old age of 25, 26 years old. That's not a frightening thing to a guy like me. The frightening thing in my life is that I'm going to live and not die. I'm going to get up out of that bed. I'm going to go back to that penitentiary. I'm going to come back out, and I'm going to start that rat race over God, and God knows I don't want to do that no more. I lay in that bed with that type of torture. And one night, because I knew nothing better to do, I screamed out the only prayer I'd ever said in my life. I said, "Oh, God, help me." I thought for a long time nothing happened because there's no blinding flashes of light. Nobody come running down the hall with a dozen donuts, and we got an AA meeting down there. I didn't get up and wander off into the tulips somewhere. I just went to sleep. And I don't know how many of you ever kicked a 2-year heroin habit, but that's what I was doing. That's the first time I've been asleep in a long, long time. 2 weeks later, I'm up running around a jail looking for some more of the poison putting me back on the bed I just gotten off of. And the reason for that is, right back here, it's there today, it was there 40-some years ago, it'll be there 44 years from now if I'm still alive, is the knowledge that when I can't stand life on life terms anymore, I know what makes the big hurt go away. Although I know it wasn't quite doing it then, but if I could just find the right combination of things, it would. So I got loaded again. Years later, I run around with an old man and talk a great deal about surrender. He'd scream it out. People would tremble in their deals. And I said to him one day, "I want to ask you a question, Papa." He said, "What do you want to know?" I said, "Didn't I surrender on my deathbed in the old Los Angeles County Jail with the same depth that you surrendered on your kitchen floor in Beverly Hills?" He said, "Why, sure, without a doubt. Why?" I said, "How come I got loaded 2 weeks later and you didn't?" He said, "That's very simple, son. You got to surrender every day." What a novel concept that is. You know, my little grandmother prayed for me every day of her life. The last time I saw my grandmother alive, she knelt down on my bed at Menninger's Clinic in Topeka, Kansas. I was at my usual fighting weight, 128 pounds, bright yellow, tied down with tubes hanging out of me, foam coming out of my mouth. My grandmother, I came to out of whatever coma that I was in. My grandmother kneeling down at my bed praying for me. My grandmother prayed for me every day of her life. And I'm not saying my grandmother's prayer didn't keep me from harm's way sometime. But I'm going to tell you something I know without a shadow of a doubt. It wasn't until I asked God for help that I could get it. I had to ask. And I asked for it in that old deathbed in Los Angeles County Jail because there ain't no way I could get from that bed to that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in November 1959. No way. There ain't no way because I ain't going. And there I am. I sat in that meeting on my throne of contempt up against the back wall with my coat collar up and my shades on. I was cool when I got here. If I'd been any cooler, I'd have froze to death, for God's sake. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on there. I see two big A's on the backboard. I thought I'm in some type of an aircraft again. I don't know what AA is. Said this clown sitting next to me that day, "What's this?" I said, "It's Alcoholics Anonymous." I sunk down in my seat. I don't invite you, the big gangster, hanging around with winos. Been Gangsters Anonymous or Over Hip Anonymous or Ringtail Baboons Anonymous or Dope Fiends Anonymous. Oh. I just get chills when I say that. Dope Fiends! Makes addicts seem kind of candy-ass, don't it? You want to be bad, be bad. I was. I don't know what's going on. I'm fascinated by these people. I don't know what's wrong with them. They get up on Sunday morning. On Sunday morning. They leave their houses, buy their own gasoline. Nobody's getting paid in those days for nothing. They drive up those old back roads. They spend 2 hours talking to a room full of people who don't want to listen to them. People like me who sat in the back row and made fun of them. Took me a long time to realize how very sick that was. Here I am, sitting in the penitentiary. I don't know when I'm going home, and I'm making fun of people who are leaving in an hour. Oh, but I'm hip. What got me is I don't understand them. They fascinate me. Why would anybody do that? I don't understand it. There was something about these people that just absolutely bothered me. The best way I can put it to you. It bothered me. What I've come to understand was that an alcoholic identified with another alcoholic. I didn't understand that yet. But the reason I really didn't understand is because the first time in my life, I'm looking at givers. I'm looking at people who are giving a little just for the hell of giving it, expecting nothing in return. See, I'm a taker. Takers don't hang out with givers. Takers hang out with takers. That's why they're all losers. Really, it's true. I mean, you look at them. They just keep taking from one group like vouchers. They just, you know, and pretty soon, if you're like me, you run out of groups. And every once in a while, you got to find another group of people to hate so you can get in there and take from them. Takers are all losers. So you're looking at one. A taker. I don't understand anything about giving. That's why they fascinate me. Why would anybody do that? See, that's what fascinates people in AA, newcomers. What the hell are these people doing? What is it going on? I didn't understand. But there was some, I asked one day. I got the courage. You know how you are. You kind of slide up every once in a while. You're too hip that the balls of your feet are tickling when you bounce up there, though. You know, look, I'm one of them little dumb dolls in the back of a car. You know? And I said to one of them, hey, you know how you talk to them when you're cool. If I'd had a hat, I'd have had it on backwards or something, you know. I said to him, hey, he looked at me and said, what do you want? I said, what do you get out of coming up here anyhow? You come type of a sicko? Like to look at the animals in the cages? Ha! He gave me one of them deep AA answers that just floors giants like me. He said, well, son, when you can answer that question, you won't have to ask it. I pondered that for a month trying to figure out what the hell he's talking about. And see, when you're going to understand why anybody ever does anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, you don't have to ask the question no more. See, I've been sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, a very active participating member of Alcoholics Anonymous, as many of these good people here know, since my day first here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've learned some things that are not opinions, they're just natural facts, by sitting in the average 5 or 6 meetings a week, watching what goes on around me. I've watched, my old sponsor, Norm Alpha, used to talk a great deal about an invisible line crossing over from control to uncontrolled. I don't have any qualms with that whatsoever. What I've come to realize, though, there's an invisible line in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're an alcoholic of my type, and you don't cross over that line, you're going to die drunk. Or you're going to go insane. There ain't no way to beat the deal. And the line, that line here, is the line from being a taker to being a giver. And you got to learn to give just for the hell of giving and expecting nothing in return, not even the idea you're going to stay sober. Just give for the hell of giving it. And the reason I know that is my book, Alcoholics Anonymous, says, selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of all of my problems. I must be rid of it or it's going to kill me. It doesn't say I can put it aside and take it whenever I want it. If I don't get rid of this selfishness and self-centeredness, I'm going to die drunk. I'm an alcoholic. I don't have any more choice about that than I do about flying around this room. And I got to give a little just for the hell of giving. I don't comprehend that when I'm new in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not an alcoholic anyhow when I come here. People proved it to me from podiums like this. They come in here and say, I used to drink. Now I don't drink anymore. Everything's just wonderful. I'm sitting back there as physically sober as they are. I say, I guess I'm not alcoholic then. I'm as sober as you are, Buster, and I'm crazy. God, I wish I was alcoholic, I used to say. If I was alcoholic, all I'd have to do is not drink. I'd be okay. See, that's not what alcoholism is. To the alcoholic, sobriety is the enemy. It's not the answer. But yet it is the answer. Isn't that goofy? Being sober is not the answer to the alcoholic, but yet it's the only answer. Isn't that stupid? It's just the way it is. I sat in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous one day, and my day was a Sunday. Everything good that's ever happened to me in AA when I was in the penitentiary happened to me on Sunday, but that's the only time they came. A guy walked in that I knew did 23 flat years in the penitentiary and changed my life, just like that. He walked in, he stood at a podium, like Alcoholics Anonymous like this, and looked down where I sit and said, you don't have to live like this no more if you don't want to. Because you don't have to do it like this no more. Nobody had ever told me that. They'd been telling me since I was 9 years old not to drink these things, swallow these things, smoke these things, and shoot these things, but nobody ever told me how to live without doing it. Nobody. And what none of these great learned people ever seemed to understand was, every time they told me that, I was as physically sober as I am right now. How many times I wanted to scream out, good God, doctor, don't you understand? Because they don't. If you're not alcoholic, I'll never understand. If you're not alcoholic, you'll never understand why I drink. But if you're not alcoholic, I'll never understand why you don't. Have you ever watched them? I have sat in Al-Anon meetings back there and heard them. How Mary got hurt, Bill won't get sober, on and on and on. The guy sit there and go, drink for Christ's sake! Why don't you take a drink? And the reason they don't, they take one, they pick up a drink and go, ooh, that makes me dizzy. I told a story before, but it's just an illustration of people like me. I was coming back from a place one time with my lovely wife, Karen, and we got wheels up in Dallas. We got kicked up to first class because the plane was oversold. And you ain't no more than got the wheels up, and they come running down the aisle with a bottle of that wine, want to pour you a drink. Across the aisle, there's a woman. They poured her a glass of wine. She promptly curled up and took a nap. Now, it may not have bothered the stewardess, but my wife, who was alcoholic, and me, was going absolutely crazy. She said, did you see that? I said, yes, I did. The spiritual giant that I am, magnificent member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I just let it slide. Seventeen ginger ales later, a couple of tomato juices, lunch. Lunch came, she woke a lady up, fed her lunch. Ain't touched that wine yet. Long airplane ride, that's all I can tell you. Picked up her tray, she went back to sleep again. What almost got her killed. We get into our final approach into Long Beach, and the steward, I said to this woman, madam, would you like to finish your wine? Finish it? For Christ's sake, she hadn't even started it yet. What do you mean, finish it? That's what I wanted to say. But being a spiritual giant, member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I just sit there. What she said, damn near got me out of my seat. Oh, no, she said, if I drink that, it'll make me sleepy. I don't understand that. Not at all do I understand that. Do you think she would have understood it if I'd had two highballs and shanghaied the plane to Mexico? Not anymore, and I would understand her. Don't understand it. That day in that penitentiary, that little man gave me the key to what we should tell all newcomers in Alcoholics Anonymous. He didn't give me any of that nonsensical stuff that comes from somewhere else outside AA.
90 meetings, 90 days. Don't drink if your butt falls off.
I don't know where that came from. It didn't come out of our book. Book says if you don't believe you're alcoholic, go drink. Nothing's going to prove anything quicker than that. But that's before we got correct. Before we became money bags is what really happened, if you want to know the truth. He told me there was a book called Alcoholics Anonymous in the library. I should go get it. And if I would go get that book, he'd go home and pray that I'd find some part of me in it. That's all he said. I went over to the prison library and stole the book. The reason you got to understand, I got image. I got big time image, big time gangster image. And you don't let no big time gangster image find a book, Alcoholics Anonymous, on his name signed alongside of it, out of the prison library, because they got a bigger grapevine than the penitentiary. We got an AA. So I stole it. And I opened it up to prove to you that my case was different, wouldn't work for me. Not to stay sober, not to live a good life. And probably one of the greatest, or the greatest, events that's ever happened to me in my life happened to me one day sitting in a room with a man doing what our program of recovery says is a fifth step. Now, I have a lovely wife that I love and I adore. I got two beautiful daughters and four great grandsons. I got a great job that I do. I got a host of friends all over the world. But the greatest single event that happened to me in my life, all those are all great events, don't get me wrong, all great things. The greatest event happened to me that day in that room. I heard myself say to that man during that fifth step that I was an alcoholic. Way down deep inside of me, there came a freedom I experienced at this very instant. I experienced it right in that chair. When I heard the most magnificent words being read that tells me what I have to do here. First step of our program, recovery, was read here today. Said I have to fully order an eight ball for me. I just thought I'd just throw a little humor out there. The line in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, third chapter, second paragraph, that I love more, says I have to fully concede to my innermost self I'm an alcoholic. That doesn't mean
I'm alcoholic.
It means I have to fully concede in here that I'm an alcoholic. That means I got to give up the battle. That's all that means. That don't mean there's nothing big. I just got to give up the battle. Okay, here I am. I'll do it. Probably the line in that book that probably kills more alcoholics in the world than anything that I know of is the one they overlook the most. And that's the one that said the delusion that we are like other people or presently maybe has to be smashed. It doesn't say to put it aside. It says it has to be smashed. I am not like other people. I'm not like that lady on that airplane. I'm not like that lovely lady Barbara who spoke at the Al Anon. I am not like these people. I suffer from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I cannot take a drink of alcohol. My life depends on it. Until the day I die, I will be an alcoholic. Until the day I die, I will have to come to Alcoholics Anonymous meeting to be given treatment for this illness of mine. I don't get it at the Safeway markets. I don't get it at the golf course. I don't get it anywhere. I only get it here. This is where my illness and my identification and my usefulness to this world takes place in my life. I walked out of that penitentiary on the 4th day of June, 1961. I don't know anything about a world. I've never been in it. Been around it. I've been through it. I've been over it. I lived on street corners. I live in gangs. I live in institutions. I'm strapped down in straitjackets. I'm hit with high-pressure fire hoses. I've been electrocuted four or five times. I've been shot and thrown out of cars. I've been stabbed. I have all kinds. I don't know anything about living a normal, decent life out here, but I'm armed with something. 19 months. I'm in an AA group, and I'm reading the book Alcoholics Anonymous and follow the instructions. And somewhere during that period of time, to the best of my ability, I got to the first 9 steps of our program of recovery, and a dream appeared in my head. It wasn't anything big. It was just, maybe someday. Maybe someday. I never thought it ever come past. Maybe someday they'd allow me the privilege of coming and sitting in their meetings. Maybe someday. I said to myself, I never take vows. I just said to myself, if they will give me the extreme privilege of coming and sitting in their meetings, I'll do anything they ask me to do. I never dreamed that 11 people like me even sit, which I thought there'd be a little glass room for me like I was at last night, where I could sit there and stare at the good people. I never dreamed anybody asked me to do nothing. But the vow I've kept for over 42 years of my life, I've done exactly whatever it is Alcoholics Anonymous has asked me to do. That's all. Whatever Alcoholics Anonymous asks me to do, I do. Sometimes willingly, sometimes grudgingly. I went home to see my mother. She fell off the steps blind drunk. I picked her up and put her on a couch and said, Mom, I'm going to an AA meeting. She said, fine, I think you should. I like to tell you, I got sober, and Mom got sober, and the dog got sober, and the cat got sober, and the kids got sober, and everybody's sober. Ha, ha, ha. My number three grandson's in a treatment center right now. He's a crackhead. You know who took him? My baby daughter. His aunt took him. I watched my mother drink herself to death. You ever stood by on the sidelines and watched somebody you love drink themselves to death? I have. Powerless to do anything about it. Ain't nothing any more powerless than that. To turn my mother over to the same God, this kind and loving God that would allow me to walk upright in the world. The most horrible thing I've ever seen. I was the last thing in this world my mother ever saw. I sat there and held her hand. She had a bad 6 or 7 months there before she died. Diabetes ate her up. If you'd have told my mother an hour or a minute before she died, aren't you proud of your son, Johnny? Man, he came out of them streets, out of them gangs, out of them penitentiaries, he found out he's alcoholic and joined that AA. Man, aren't you proud of your son? My mother would have looked at you without a shadow of a doubt and said, my son's not alcoholic. His life got a lot better when he quit running around with the Mexicans. On the surface, that looks true. I didn't realize I was white till I was sober 3 years, for Christ's sake. I guess if you go talk to one of these giants from one of these drying out places, they'd tell you things like something, they parrot something like, I guess your mama's in a state of denial. I want you to know a denial is a river in Egypt. My book don't talk about no denial. My book talks about a delusion. The delusion that I'm like other people or presently maybe has to be smashed. Talked about an obsession. The great obsession of every abnormal drinker is that someday, somehow, he's going to control and enjoy drinking. Isn't that amazing? And you wonder why alcoholics drink? Bad information. Lack of commitment, I suppose. I went to a meeting one night, a guy had a... I didn't ask him. He said, I'm going to help you get it done. I said, what do you want me to do? He said, why do you ask me? I said, you just told me you're going to be my sponsor. He said, if I can't run my life, Johnny, what the hell makes you think I can run yours? I said, what do you want me to do? He said, why don't you do what I do? I said, what is it you do? He says, if you do what I do, then you'll know what I do. Jesus, I got to find out what he does now. He says, first thing, why don't you get a job and go to work? You're a bum. I said, I'm not a bum. He said, what are you? I said, I'm an AA member. He said, no, you're an AA bum. Bums don't work. He said, get off of welfare. I almost hit him. I said, don't you ever say that to me again, Norm Alpie. I never been on welfare. He said, what do you call living in penitentiary? Self-supporting through your own contributions? So he got me a job. I got a job out in the oil field. Didn't work very much. Finally got one paycheck. By this time, my wife back with that little girl. Things are working good, huh? Got a paycheck. I don't know what to do with a paycheck. I've never had one. Thieves don't get paychecks on a regular basis. I'm sorry. I mean, when I was in the penitentiary, they didn't send you welfare checks in. They just don't do it. I don't know what to do with it. I have to go stand at markets and watch. See what people do when they get paid. I don't know what to do. You know what they ever watch them? Here they come. Got them kids, put them in the basket, shoot down the aisle. I got a paycheck. I went home, told my wife, let's go to market. She said, why? I said, that's what they do when they get paid. She said, who? I said, them. She didn't know who them were. You do. That's why we're here, on account of them. We went to the market and did what they do when they go to the market. An hour later, I went to get some money, and somebody stole her purse. You want to hear somebody scream? Listen to a thief when they get stolen from. I ranted and raved and jumped and hollered. If I'd caught that guy, you'd have another talker here this morning. Funny thing about it, I went to work that afternoon, and I've been getting paychecked ever since. Hasta la vista. Till we meet again. I forgot where I was at. My name's Johnny and I'm an alcoholic. What do you want, money, please? Oh, that's paying for my talk. What another eight ball for me there, dude. Hey, boy, ain't we got important since we got cell phones. I had a sponsor who didn't put up with none of my nonsense. He hated me. I found out he was my best friend. I told him, I said, Norm, I just want you to be my friend. So you want a friend, Johnny? Get a dog. I'm your sponsor. He turned out to be the best friend I've ever had in my life. You know why? He loved me. He loved me enough to tell me the truth, regardless if it embarrassed him or cost us our friendship or our companionship. He loved me enough to tell me the way it was. So I couldn't drive a car because I didn't have a driver's license. I said, why is that? He said, citizens like him had a right to be protected from jerks like me. I mean, he had all the answers for everything, and they were right. It's right. Who do I think I was? To go out there and just because I'm sober and Alcoholics Anonymous, I have a right to everything that everybody else has been doing all their life. Put other people's lives in jeopardy just because I personally want to drive. It's an inconvenience for me to ride my little girl's bicycle to meetings. It's an inconvenience for me to have to call up and ask for a ride to a meeting. It's an inconvenience for everything that I do, and I have to call him. Norm, I need to go to a meeting tonight. Norm, would you come by and pick me up? Okay, I'll be there, jackass. Be standing on the street corner. I ain't waiting for you. He didn't. I thought one time, it was a hot July night, that he was going to wait for me. We were going to Santa Ana. It was a little club over there. It was a one-car garage, that's what it was. It wasn't as big as that section. And everybody smoked. You could not see the speaker. And I knew it was hot, so I did the unpardonable sin for a newcomer, I thought. I thought about how hot it's going to be in that club, so I put on my new tank top and my new shorts, slicked back my hair, put my shades on and my thongs, stood on the street corner, waited for old Norm. Norm drove up, took one look at me, and drove off. Now, a lot of you people have been sober for a while, heard Norm Alpe tapes, I'm sure of that. You don't know how close you came to never hearing one of his tapes that night. If I'd have caught him, I'd have killed him. He didn't, don't you realize who he was doing that to? He did. And I called him up, I said, Norm, you left me standing on the street corner like an idiot. He says, you are an idiot, Johnny. You act like an idiot, you behave like an idiot, so that's an idiot. And I said, why were you on the table here? He said, would you go to church dressed like that? I said, no. He said, you ain't going to my church dressed like that either. Jeez. I said, why do you yell at me? You tell me to shut up and sit still. You want to go to meetings? You don't want to pay attention? That's your business. You ever stop to think that maybe somebody else does? No, I haven't. He said, I didn't think so. Selfish, self-centered people like you don't ever think about anybody but yourself. So if I was you, but I'm not you, I would sit still and pay attention to everything that goes on during meetings. Why is that, Norm? That one of these days, you may need to hear everything you ever heard in an AA meeting. And you better be in an atmosphere where there's enough people who care about the person sitting next to them, who have enough common decency and courtesy to be concerned about the people sitting next to them, that you're not interrupted when that thought process takes place, or you'll be dead. I can't tell you how many times I have been in that state where prayer ain't possible. I'm so into myself because something ain't going my way. At that particular moment, there ain't no prayer. There ain't no, oh, God, grant me the serenity. Stop my car and get on my knees. I'm crazy. And something that somebody said in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous pulled me out of that darkness for an instant, saved my life. Just saved it. I'm glad that the meetings I went to when I was new and still go to today, that we have people with that type of consideration for the people sitting around them. That the self-centered jackasses don't get up and wander around in these meetings, in my meetings that I go to. Thank God for that, because most of the places where I go to meetings, they're concerned about the people sitting next to them. And even though they don't want to hear, they're concerned about the people sitting next to them. It's not all about me. It's not all about them. It's not all about that. I sit in meetings and don't want to hear anything sometimes. What a man Norm Alpe was. I call him up in the middle of the night and say things to him. I always called him in the middle of the night, see if he'd answer the phone. Most of the time I didn't want anything. I'm just testing him. I said, Norm, he'd say, what do you want now, jackass? I said, Norm, my program ain't working. Norm, he'd say, try ours. Hang up. And when I called him back, I'd say, what do you mean? He said, jackass, your program never did work. Your program got you at the ripe old age of 25, 26 years old, crawling around a cell in solitary confinement, a maximum security penitentiary. That's your program. He is now on a part-time basis. Our program seems to serve you very well. What a wise man he was. I was with him at a meeting one night. I'm getting hot shot now. I'm about 2 or 3 years sober. I'm getting really, you know what I mean? And I got back at the literature table at the coffee break. Guy tapped me on the shoulder. I turned around. There's a guy staring at me. He said, Johnny. And I said, what? He said, man, I heard you talk the other night. You know you're a miracle. I said, really? What was it I said? You know how humble we can get. He went on and on and on, and I went on and on and on, and out and out and out. And first thing I know, I'm staring out the window looking for my spaceship or something. I come flying back and sitting in my chair about the time they got ready to chant. Fell down in my seat, you know. Sit there and look out the window. Norm talk. We in the car. We're driving home. He's driving normally. What's wrong with you, jackass? You smoking that stuff? I told him, Norm, I don't think you're going to understand this, but I'm a miracle. Norm didn't react that way. Norm didn't think it was at all funny. He yelled at me and said, what? And almost ran into the divider. He said, where do you get this nonsense, Johnny? I said, Amy, how are you going to do that? He said, you're not a miracle, jackass. Alcoholics Anonymous is the miracle. You're just a small part of it. Now, I don't know what that does for all the miracles in San Bernardino this morning. But I can tell you what it's done for me. It's kept me small enough to stay here. You can't imagine what an egotist like me would do if I thought I was a miracle. You can't just let your imagination soar. I'd be getting us some buses to go to Waco to do it right this time. See, I have that type of an ego. I know that. That's why I have to have a sponsor who's stronger than my head. That's why I got to be in 5 or 6 meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous a week. That's why I can't trust my own judgment, even today after all these years. It's not sound. It's always slanted towards me. It's always slanted towards me. Today, as it will be tomorrow, and for the rest of my life, my main problem is my selfishness and my self-centeredness. It will always be that. The great thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is that I can come to meeting and be concerned about you. That's the miraculous happening in my life, that I can actually sit in a meeting and be concerned for another human being. Or be pleased that another human being is getting this thing. It's just the most amazing thing that I know of. For a guy like me, that's impossible. I can't tell you every meal I've eaten has been a banquet. Every day I live out on the sunny side of the streets out there. I'm a basic human being. I make a lot of mistakes. Basically, it has to do with my self-centeredness. My mistakes are not because of my alcoholism, you know. My mistakes are on account of my selfishness and my self-centeredness. That's what it's all about. And if it wasn't for my activities and participation in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd have killed me a long, long time ago. And it wouldn't have been because of my alcoholism. It would have been because of my selfishness and my self-centeredness. It runs rampant in my life today. It'll run rampant. Before the day's over, my self-centeredness will be completely controlled before me. But I can't really worry about it for a while because I got two guys I sponsor with me. When I'm listening to their nonsense, I don't have to worry about mine, for Christ's sake. They thought we turned that corner and looked at that smoke. They said, "You sure we're going to an AA meeting, Johnny?" I said, "I hope so." Life is really very good. My sponsor, Norm, died the day before my 22nd birthday. Just dropped dead. My old Papa Chuck was sick. Been sick for a long time. I was sober, so I went and took care of him the last year that he lived. I got to pay back what my papa gave me. AA's been awful good to me. It's the best thing that's ever happened to me in my entire lifetime. People like you come to see people like me. And you came unannounced. That's the deal. You came to me unannounced. I didn't ask for you. You came to me unannounced because you thought that it would be a good idea to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. If it had been up to me, I'd have never come to an AA meeting. I'd have never been able to get sober out here like you good people did. Not me. I don't know what's wrong with me. It took a while for me to study our book and find out the nature of my illness, find out what's basically wrong with me, and to realize I have this solution. It's an amazing thing. I remember one time I couldn't get sober. I asked Papa one time. I said, "What's going on here?" I said, "How come I'm sober, Pop? If I'm not one of the chosen people," I gave him one of them chosen deals. You know what I mean? "I'm chosen, chosen, chosen." He said, "You're not chosen, Johnny." He said, "None of us are chosen. We're just all God's kids. That's all." He says, "You either are, or you ain't. If you're God's kid, you are. If you ain't God's kid, you ain't. We all are." And I said, "Wait a minute. How come I'm sober then? If I'm not special in God's eyes, how come I'm sober? I know people who are far better than I will ever be who died drunk." My mother was one of them. My mother lived in torment from 1951 the day she buried her baby until the day she died. And she hated me for it every moment. She had every right to do that. How come she had to die drunk? That's very simple, John. You've come to understand you're one of God's kids and you act like it. I said, "What do God's kids act like?" "Oh, I don't know. Just wander around and try to help God's kids get things done that need to be done. And they do it for free, and they do it for fun." What a novel concept. Now, I know there's very many people like this in the world, but there have been three very outstanding members of Alcoholics Anonymous that I'm sure as I'm standing here are God's kids. If they ain't, I don't want to be one. The first one was my sponsor, Norm, Alpie. I watched him get in his car night after night after night after night and go out and try to help God's kids get things done that need to be done, and he did it for free, and he did it for fun. The other was this old man I called Papa who lived in Laguna Beach. I watched him night after night. When he was no longer capable of driving, he had somebody drive him night after night, week after week. He tried to help God's kids get things done that need to be done. If he ain't one of God's kids, I don't want to be one. The third one I'm sure of is my current sponsor, a guy by the name of Clancy. I watch him night after night after week after week after day after day after day try to help God's kids get things done that need to be done. Now, if he ain't one of God's kids, I don't want to be one. I'm sorry. And when I get to wherever I'm going, when it's all over, and there ain't birds singing and flowers blooming and people like Papa and Norm and Clancy, I don't think I want to go there. And the reason I don't want to go there, until I run into people like these, I live in absolute and total hell. If hell is any hotter than where I've been, I pray God I don't ever go there. And before these people came into my life, I lived in absolute and total hell. And with them, I've had some glimpses of heaven. I've had some peace in my heart and some direction and purpose for being. I've, I found a God of my very own who loves me like he loves everybody else, who doesn't pick me out to be special. He doesn't make me a special person. My God is the God who loves all his kids. I don't want a punishing God. I don't want a God that would favor me above anybody else. I wouldn't have anything to do with a God like that whatsoever. My papa talked to me about a God like that, a good God. God loved all people. It's an amazing thing that I stand here before you today and tell you that every living thing I have in my life I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous. Every feeling deep inside of me, the peacefulness that I carry with me most of the time, my purpose for being, my direction in life, my solution to life, and the things that I do in my life are just absolutely miraculous to me. Everything I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous. And this morning I'd like to tell you this, that it's a long, long walk from a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary to where I stand right now. But for the grace of God, AA, and good people like you, I could have missed it all. Thank you very much. Yeah.